Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell. We are here on Monday, July 8th, 2019. I have a very exciting show for you today. I'm pleased to have joining me a longtime friend of the show, a very talented writer and podcaster in his own right, and someone whose viral tweet was documented by Sue Bird and referred to as someone in her story at the Players Tribune. It is The Ringer's Robert Mays. Mays, how are you?
I'm good. I'm someone who tweeted, so that's a new kind of, you know, bar for me to have reached in my life. I'm very happy to be here.
What was the reaction to that? Like I know, obviously, you know, the tweet you tweeted about Megan Rapinoe was retweeted many times and liked many times. What was the reaction privately in the Mays camp to that Sue Bird story, like when it came out?
It was more so that it just brought more people into my orbit when it came to that. I'm getting friends' dads bringing it up to them, which was really funny. And that's whenever anything like that happens, that's what's always the best part, is that it goes in directions that you can never predict, and people are going to be involved that you never expected to be involved. Occasionally, at times on the internet, that's very bad, but in this case, it was pretty funny.
When has that happened in the past for you?
I don't know. Just when you have a tweet that somehow, you know, gets legs like that, and it just seems like more people that you would never interact with online somehow come into your orbit. And again, that can be both a good and bad thing.
I think it was good here. You know what? Not a lot of tweets are good. I think that was a good tweet, Mace. I'm proud
of
you.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that.
For so what are we doing today?
My tweets are bad.
Many tweets are bad.
Yeah. Exactly. Because I believe you were looking into some of them recently, and you asked me if I wanted to talk about them, and you know I always like to talk about season-long bets because it's fun to discuss them and eventually get them wrong.
Yeah, and you were also on Twitter talking about the Super Bowl odds for a couple teams that seemed out of whack to you.
Yeah, I think this is the time of year I first start to kind of take stock of the league as a whole, right around the 4th of July. I think that's kind of when we turn the corner and training camps are on, you know, we're on the doorstep of them and everything else. So I started thinking about that stuff, and there were a couple of them that just did not make sense to me. One of them was the Panthers at 60-1, which I saw the Falcons at 30-1 some places. I don't know who can explain to me why the Falcons have twice as good of a chance at winning the Super Bowl, considering the Panthers were 6-2 last year before Cam Newton got hurt. And the other one, I didn't necessarily think it was out of whack. I just liked it. I just think that the Eagles are the best team in the NFC right now. Mm-hmm. And if the Rams and the Saints are 8-1, I'm not sure why the Eagles should be 50-1.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. And we talked about it privately. We're going to get to it publicly here. So here's my concept for today's podcast that I have Robert Mays joining me for. We are going to go through the listed bets that were posted at the Caesars Sportsbook in Las Vegas, Nevada, which I believe is a official partner of ESPN. And we are going to take 1,000 fake dollars, not real U.S. dollars, fake dollars for entertainment only written on the paper. And we are going to spread those bets out across, in my case, 10, according to Mays, quote-unquote, many bets for the upcoming season.
You didn't tell me 10, so I picked a bunch that I liked.
I believe, I'm not going to check my text messages, but I think 10 might have been in there. I'm not 100% sure, but under any circumstance, you made a lot of bets, it's fair to say.
Yes, fictional bets, a lot of fictional bets. A lot of fictional bets were of interest to me. That is what I will say.
All right. So since you have many more than I do, it sounds like, do you want to go first?
Sure. These are in very random order because you just sent me a bunch of upside down sheets from Caesars. So with absolutely no rhyme or reason to which came first, which came second. So this may be kind of scattered, but that's okay. Your fault and not mine. So okay. the first sheet was the passing yards winner.
Yep.
And there were a couple of them that really jumped out to me. Jameis Winston at 15-1, I think, is really good. I think their defense is going to be bad again. I feel they're really going to try to push the ball downfield. I think if I had to pick somebody, even outside of the odds, to lead the league in passing this year, he would probably be one of the first couple names. Mm-hmm. And at 15-1, I really liked it. And the other one that jumped out, just because there's really no way to know what their offense is going to look like, how good they're going to be. They're such a wild card. Kyler Murray at 41 is really fun to me.
That's on my list. I
mean, they could throw the ball 700 times.
Right.
Did that surprise you?
Yeah, of course not. They have no Patrick Peterson for 6 weeks. They're going to go crazy.
It's the other one that I was looking at. I couldn't find it on the sheet, but would be really interesting to me in the same vein is what you could get David Johnson's total yards from scrimmage at.
Mm-hmm,
because I think that for rushing yards, it's kind of a long shot because I don't know how much they're going to run the ball, period. Mm-hmm. But I still think he's going to get a ton of touches. It wouldn't surprise me if he was maybe their first or second most targeted receiver. Would that be crazy to you?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely, that could be the case. I thought about – I have the Kyler Murray bet on my list at $30. He is 40-1, I believe, to lead the league in passing yards. For the same reasons you think, absolutely, they're going to play at a fast pace. Their defense is going to be bad for the first 6 weeks and maybe not great afterwards. I'm not totally sure if that defense is going to be very good. And they're going to play at a super fast pace on offense. I have a lot of faith that they're going to be throwing the ball quite frequently under Cliff Kingsbury. I sort of in the same vein was thinking about Christian Kirk as the receiving leader at 85-1. You know, just thinking that they're going to throw the ball a lot. Larry Fitzgerald's going to get plenty of targets. That's one of the reasons you might not lean towards Christian Kirk. But if you're looking at a long shot, to me, I think he is the favorite amongst that list of options.
Yeah, I could see that. My concern with them is just not knowing exactly how things are going to be distributed.
Sure.
And when you go with Murray, you take that out of the equation because he's the one constant factor in this.
Exactly.
So that's why I would rather go that direction because who knows how those snaps are going to be distributed. Who knows what sort of personnel packages they're going to be in. That we can't predict, but we do know that Kyler Murray is going to be on the field every single play.
Yes. I also, by the way, when you're saying we can't predict that, I think Cliff Kingsbury also can't predict that at this current time.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they are such an unknown at this point that I would be betting on the one thing that I can kind of count on right now. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any rushing and receiving interest there?
Yeah, so there was a couple rushing that I liked. I liked Rashad Penny at 75-1 because I think that if Chris Carson gets hurt,
sure,
they're going to run the ball more than anybody else in the league most likely. So Carson's odds were much, much better. So that's just kind of a, you know, if Carson gets dinged up, they ran the ball 52% of the time last year. I thought that one was intriguing. Devontae Freeman at 50-1.
Yeah, I like Devontae Freeman at 50-1.
Because Tevin Coleman's not there anymore. You know, I'm not sure what his workload is going to be with Dirk Cutter, but I still thought that was a little too high to me. And I just, this is the easy one, but how can you not like Saquon at 13-2? He doesn't have the best odds, which doesn't make any sense to me. Their offensive line is going to be better. They're going to lean on him intensely. Even at such a low number, I still like that one.
So Ezekiel Elliott is the favorite at 2-1 here. And I agree. I think they should certainly be closer at the very least. Are you someone who buys into the idea that the Cowboys offense is going to be totally different with Kellen Moore as the offensive coordinator this year?
I do. I think it's going to be much better. I think you're referring to how much Ezekiel Elliott is going to get the ball. That's a little harder to predict, but I think one of my bets later on was Dak Prescott's over passing yardage because when you look at that offense the last few years with Scott Linehan, it was backwards. It was very Stone Age. They did very little to help him. I just think it's going to be more creative. I think it's going to be more modern. And I just think it's going to be more efficient when they're throwing the ball. And that's why, even if you don't like Zeke's touches necessarily, I think that offense is going to be better.
The longest shot at Caesars to lead the league in rushing yards is Frank Gore at 250-1. I would love that so much if that actually came true.
You might as well just put a couple bucks on it because it'd be so fun to root for if it happened to be the greatest thing in the history of your life.
It would be incredible. I will say, not on this sheet, the Dolphins are 80-1 to win the AFC East. I did put $10 on that.
Oh, God. Why?
2008. 2008 happened. That was a thing. You were there. You were alive, Maze. You saw that.
I know, but it's one thing if they were trying to be decent this year, but they're not. They're actively trying to not be good. So it's hard for me to see that happening, especially because I think even if we don't love the value of it, the Jets did get better this offseason. I would say the same about the Bills. I mean, they're not scary, but they're definitely better than they were in 2017, and the Dolphins are not.
In 2007, Mays, the Patriots were 16-0. They were the best team any of us had ever seen. The Bills were 7-9. Jets are 4-12. The Jets stunk, but the Dolphins were 1-15, and they won the division the following year. In a division where the Patriots were 11-5, and the Jets were 9-7, and the Bills were 7-9, so those teams were not bad. It wasn't like the Dolphins just leaped the Patriots and everyone else sucked. That was a tough division, and the Dolphins still won it. Stranger things have happened. I'm just saying.
I understand that, but look at what the Dolphins have done systematically for the last like 3 months. They let their good players go on purpose. There's just no way that happens.
Okay, but what if Josh Rosen is good?
I don't know how Josh Rosen can good. I don't know how good Josh Rosen can possibly be in that offense.
Okay,
they have the worst offensive line in the NFL as it currently stands. It is not even close. You couldn't even come up with a number two. That's how bad they're going to be.
Their left tackle's good.
Great.
That's a good
That's
start.
That's how offensive lines work historically. We know this.
That's a good start.
So bad. Their infrastructure is horrendous. And again, they're doing it on purpose. I think it's interesting, but they really tried to tear it down this year. And this is not the season where a team that was bad last year is going to be winning the division. They're not the case where that's going to happen.
Can I throw an idea out there for you?
Sure.
You know that the Wildcat, it's been 12 years. It's already gone through the whole cycle. Could be time for a Wildcat.
The Wildcat can be good again.
Why not?
Who's going to run it? Just Kenyon Drake Wildcats? That's all it's going to be?
That sounds great. That sounds awesome. Why wouldn't that work?
Oh, God. I feel so bad for Josh Rosen having to get behind that line after playing in Arizona last year. I can't catch a break.
The two worst offensive lines in football year after year. Anyway, so receiving yards, I actually had Mike Evans sort of in line with your Jameis Winston.
Yeah, I love that.
11-1, where he's fifth. Like he's behind Devontae Adams. He's in fifth. He's behind Odell Beckham. He's behind Michael Thomas. He's behind DeAndre Hopkins. He's behind Antonio Brown. I feel pretty strongly that Mike Evans will have more receiving yards than Antonio Brown this year.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. If I had to pick anybody on that list, that's probably where I would go with it.
You have any long shots on that list that interest you?
Not especially. I mean, looking at the list right now, there isn't anybody that jumps out to me. I think that Kenny Galladay at 40-1 could be a little bit interesting just because the target share there, if they throw the ball a lot, but I don't know if they're going to. Again, that's an offense that's in flux and is a little bit hard to predict. T.Y. Hilton at 18-1 is okay, but not really. Nothing is like, oh, yeah, I think that's really interesting.
No Allen Robinson at 75-1?
No, thank you. I was looking at his over-under yardage, and it's only 900, and I still couldn't say that I wanted to do it. That's how not confident I am in his production being any better than it was last year. Well, even though they did click a little bit more down the stretch, I love him as a player.
He's a great player.
A concern about the quarterback than it is about the receiver.
Well, you said that, not me. Let's be clear with that, Bears fans. All right, what's your next bet?
The MVPs were next to me.
Okay, I found
those. In the list that you gave me that made no sense. Again, we talked about this off the air, but this kind of is linked with the Panthers at 60-1 to win the Super Bowl that I liked. Cam Newton at 75-1 is way too high. It's just way too high. He should not have the same odds as Christian McCaffrey.
Right.
That team, I think, is going to be pretty good.
I agree.
And the quarterback of a team that's going to be pretty good should not have 75-1 odds to win the MVP.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there are questions about his health and everything else, but that offense looked really fun last season early on when he was healthy, and I have a lot of faith in it again. I think that their offensive line is much improved personnel-wise from where it was last season.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't make sense to me why more people aren't excited about them, because I think they had a really promising start to last season, and I think they had a good offseason when it comes to their offensive personnel. So I like that one. And the other one I like, just again, a team that I think is going to be very good, Philip Rivers at 12-1 was interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where you could see if they get off to a really hot start, he's playing well. The older quarterback narrative, we've heard that before. Drew Brees kind of had that juiced, you know, for the first half of last season.
Mm-hmm.
So that would not be surprising to me if he was in the conversation.
Yeah, I'm going to go in the total opposite direction. A team I think is going to be better. Don't know if they're going to be good, but they made upgrades this offseason. And a second-year quarterback, possibly a similar to a Carson Wentz situation from a few years ago. I like Sam Darnold at 75-1.
But you've written about this. I remember when you wrote about it at Grantland once, just the MVP calculus.
Right.
And everything you need to win the MVP award. And you pretty much need a first round bye. You need to be one of the best two players at your, or the best two teams in your conference to usually get it. You need to usually lead the league in fantasy scoring for quarterbacks as well, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
typically how it works. And I just don't see those things coming together for Sam Darnold.
First round bye might be tough. That's a hard sell. But I mean, I could see this offense being better. I don't think he's going to be, you know, one of the three best quarterbacks in football, but is there a chance? If I'm picking someone at that long of odds, am I interested in thinking that you know, that leap could come? I think so. There's the weapons there. I mean, this is an offense that, you know, we don't know how incredible it's going to be. But were we really thinking Carson Wentz was going to be that good in year two after his first season in Philadelphia?
I just like the players were better on that team.
The line was better for sure.
I just liked the players on that team better. The one bet I would make about the Jets, that's a little bit further down my list, but while we're on it, mm-hmm. I think Robbie Anderson over 6.5 touchdowns is really fun. Sure. He had 6 last year. He had 3 in the last 4 games. Again, I think they have interesting pieces. I just don't know if his season is going to be good enough to warrant consideration. If I was looking in that range, Lamar Jackson is more interesting to me than Sam Darnold is. Just because I think the Ravens are going to be better.
I don't know. I mean, the Ravens lost a lot of talent this offseason. And I feel like that offense is going to have growing pains. I'm worried about Lamar staying healthy.
That's fair. Yeah.
I have a lot of concerns about that team. And I love Lamar Jackson and I want him to succeed very badly, but I'm just a little scared. I would also, I didn't use this as a fake bet, but I would take some interest in Jimmy Garoppolo at 40-1.
That team it's one of the ultimate questions for me coming into the year. I was talking with Doug Farrar and a couple other people about it. He wrote about it this week, and we kind of have this – people have this opinion that when Garoppolo comes back, it's going to be this cure-all for the Niners. Mm-hmm. He was not very good last year in those first 2 games.
Sure.
And into the 3rd game. He looked really uncomfortable. He was not making quick decisions. I mean, in that offense, you really just have to throw the ball where Kyle Shanahan tells you to. Mm-hmm. And he's had problems with that so far. So I would love that offense to just be all guns firing, just kind of blowing up scoreboards. But I just don't know if they're going to be that necessarily with him. I hope that is, because I love that offense. You know that.
Yeah. I mean, one of those games was against the Minnesota Vikings, who are very good at football. That could be part of the problem, to me at least.
Their defense wasn't very good early in the season last year, though. They were having a lot of issues.
Well, they played the Rams.
They kind of clicked a little bit later on.
I mean, the Rams were the problem with the Vikings the first month of the year, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that was a horrendous game.
That was, to be fair, that was a very fun game.
It was great. I was there. It was wonderful.
It was the day after I wrote the Rams should consider trading Jared Goff and get a rookie quarterback. And then he threw 100 touchdown passes in one game.
Have you gotten any feedback from that?
Only from the Rams organization themselves through the proxy of Adam Schefter on a Twitter video. Actually, but anyway, that's another story for another day. What do you think about your next bet? What page are you on after MVP?
It's the odds to make or not make.
Yes.
So there are a couple of them that I like there. The Chiefs at +310 to not make the playoffs. Their offense is going to, what degree, that's the question, and whether their defense is going to be better, I think we don't know yet. I like some of the players they've added, but I still think they have a lot of holes. So I think +310 to not make the playoffs is actually pretty good odds. And going back to the Kyler Murray stuff, the Cardinals at 11-1 to make the playoffs, I think it's really fun.
They're 11? I didn't even see that. They're plus 1,100? Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, that would interest me. I would take
some
action.
Really high.
I mean, I don't think they're going to, but I think their chances are better than plus 1,100.
Agreed. And again, going back to the Carolina stuff that I've liked before, they're plus 275. I really like that one.
Yeah, I have that on my list as well. That implies they're going to make the playoffs 26.7% of the time. I think it's, I don't know that it's 50-50, but I think it's closer to 50-50 than it is to 26.7%.
What are you thinking with this? Is this all a Cam shoulder thing? I just don't understand how people are so down on them. It doesn't make any sense to me.
I mean, think about how injured their line was last year.
Yes.
And their line is going to be better this year. Think about the additions they made to the pass rush, to the defensive line this year. I mean, I'm not someone who has been very complimentary of Marty Herney in the past, if we're being completely honest. I thought he had a great, great offseason. And this was a team, like you said, they were 6-2 first half of the year. And even if they weren't as good necessarily as that record when it came to a play-by-play basis, I mean, they were still a team that I think were like 2-7 in one score games. I mean, I think if you had to ask me today, what is the win total for the Panthers this year without considering any of the bets or any of the odds, I would have said 10 wins. So I'm kind of shocked that they're this low.
I'm 100% with you. That's the way I've been thinking over the last kind of week as I've sat down and really started considering this stuff. And the line and the additions that they made, plus getting healthier, I like the weapons. I think that they were really promising last year on offense.
Mm-hmm.
And the pieces they added in the front seven are really good.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of questions about their secondary, and I will concede that. But when you can bring in Gerald McCoy and Bruce Irvin, even at this stage in their careers, to that group. And I think Brian Burns is going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. I just really like that team and what they did over the last few months. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't compute to me.
Mm-hmm. Would you prefer one of these two bets, Mays? Will the Saints miss the playoffs at plus 235, or will the Rams miss the playoffs at plus 270? Which would you take?
I'd take the Saints.
Yeah, I am too.
Because the Drew Brees fall off thing, it can happen at any point. And there, it's much more likely that he falls off a cliff than the entire Rams depth chart does. So that's why I would go with New Orleans. It was really concerning last season what they looked like down the stretch.
He might have already fallen off the cliff. I'm going to write about this month, I believe, for ESPN.com. That is a concern. But I mean, I guess I could see the idea that the Saints could make the playoffs is like the zombie Broncos from a few years ago with Peyton Manning at quarterback, sure, where they have the defense at this point, they have a running game, they have the offensive line. I mean, they could make it with a compromised Drew Brees, and I do have Teddy Bridgewater if Brees is really that bad, but I mean, it's like you said, it seems more likely that the Saints are going to fall off with Brees struggling versus the Rams, and I don't know, I'm actually, are you concerned about the Rams changing their personnel and compromising some elements of their offense in the process?
I'm not sure. I think there's a lot to be gained with them using more two tight ends. If you look at their efficiency numbers late last season, when they were using Higbee and Everett on the field at the same time, mm-hmm, they were throwing the ball very efficiently, as most teams do out of 12 personnel. So the argument has always been they like using 11 so much because those are the best players. Mm-hmm. They want those three receivers on the field. But I think there's a way to split the difference, and I think that they have to find that middle ground, because late last year, it was not working just the way they had hammered it for the last two seasons. They mm-hmm. need to change things up even a tiny little bit, even if it means putting lesser players on the field every so often.
Mm-hmm. So you're taking Cardinals long shot, yes. Panthers long shot, yes. I'm with you on both. All right, Mays, let's get to more of our bets here in a second. But first, guys, they say a great offense starts with a great defense. And that's especially true when it comes to the fuel you put in your car. Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline is engineered with four levels of defense against gunk, wear, corrosion, and friction to help keep your engine running like new. And now, you and your car have even more reasons to celebrate with the Shell Great Gas Giveaway. It's your chance to win free fuel for a year or one of thousands of prizes with a total prize value of over $1 million. If you're a Fuel Rewards member, you'll automatically receive one entry every time you fill up with 8 gallons or more. And if you choose new Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline, you'll get 4 entries. That's 3 more. Not a member? Download the Fuel Rewards app or go to fuelrewards.com/win to join. In engines that continuously use Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline, no purchase is necessary. Promotion ends September 1st, 2019. See official rules at fuelrewards.com/win for how to enter by mail and all details. Now back to the show. Do you have what's the next pitch?
Play props. So if we want to continue the Brees conversation, one of the ones I had, he's at under, it's his over-under touchdowns is 31.5.
Mm-hmm.
That is way too many. I'm going under that every single time. He had 32 last year. He definitely did not look as good over the second half of the season. I don't like that one. And staying on the Saints offense, Alvin Kamara's over-under total yards from scrimmage is 1860.
That's quite a lot.
That's a lot. He had 1554 last year. I know Mark Ingram is not there, but I also think they're going to use Latavius Murray a decent amount. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't think that offense is going to be as efficient. So I'm kind of, you know, shorting that entire offense. Michael Thomas is 1,200. I think that's a little low. I wouldn't mm-hmm. mind going over there. He had 1,400 last year. But Kamara and Brees, those numbers are way too high today.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
What am I missing with Latavius Murray?
What do you mean?
Like, to me, he's a guy.
I and totally agree with you.
He's had, like, 3 jobs now for, like, in significant roles.
I think he had that one really good season in Oakland. And this is an actual thing, and I don't know if it's the reason, but people love Latavius Murray.
He seems like a super nice guy.
All-time good locker room guy. So, I mean, that gives you a tail end of your career, man. People appreciate that with aging veterans. So, I don't know. I don't know if it necessarily makes sense altogether, but I agree. He's going to give a lot of chances. I mean, that contract is pretty nice. I mean, 4 years, 14, $7.2 million guaranteed. That's not a small deal.
Can I ask you also another follow-up question? You just said he had a great season in Oakland. Which timeline was this in? He had his best season in Oakland. He averaged 4 yards a carry and over 266 rushing attempts. He ran 266 times for 1,066 yards and 6 scores with 4 fumbles.
It's all relative. It's all relative.
It is all relative.
For that time, it was a good year.
Back in those days. I feel like he won you a fantasy league or something, and that's why you have such fond memories of this Latavius Murray season.
I don't even know why I have an affinity for Latavius Murray. While we're on depressing things, though, I was looking at these bets, mm-hmm. and I was asking myself, can you think of a more depressing bet than the Lamar Miller over-under rushing yards? Like, who is walking up to the window and being like, I have strong feelings about this? And then when I ask myself, is that the most depressing bet you can make? The answer is no. Because for some reason, Mike Davis is on here at 440 rushing yards over under. Who in God's name is betting on that?
I can do you one better on this sheet. Christian Wilkins, season total in sacks, over under 3.5.
Why is it Christian Wilkins and Ed Oliver? Those are the only two guys.
Okay, so you know how, like, in certain sports, the All-Star game, you have to have one person from each team make it to the All-Star team? It's like this, where you have to have one bet from each team here, so Christian Wilkins had to sneak on as the Dolphins representative.
The Ed Oliver 3 sacks is kind of fun. Like, it would be fun to root for, but it's really hard. It's just, like, one of those things, like, I think he's an exciting player, but it's really hard to predict, like, sack totals for young players. It's never as much as you want it to be.
I'm just picturing one guy.
His first year.
Right. I'm picturing one guy coming to the sports book in Vegas every week and just watching Ed Oliver play, hoping to hit that, you know, the $10,000 he put on the over 3 sacks for Ed Oliver.
Do you want to go through yours? Because I have a lot of these. So I think the fake bets you have, we might as well knock those out.
Okay. I have 3 unders. As you know, I'm a super optimistic person. By nature.
Absolutely. Shockingly, I have a lot of overs and you have a bunch of unders. It doesn't make any sense with our personalities.
What are the odds? Okay, so I'm going to start Nick Foles. Total passing yards under 3,554.5. Number one, this is not an offense that has very good talent at receiver. Do you know who the Jaguars' starting tight end is?
I legitimately don't.
I don't either. Wide receiver core, I believe it's a rookie, if I'm not mistaken. But not like, you know, it's not like it's like Noah Fant or TJ Hawkinson.
They signed Jeff Swaim this offseason.
Yes.
And they drafted Josh Oliver in the 3rd round.
Yes. The tight end is not going to be a big part of this offense. And we know Nick Foles likes to throw to the tight ends. It seems like it's an important part of his game in Philadelphia. And then the wide receiving core is Keelan Cole, Marquise Lee coming off of an ACL, J.D. Westbrook, DJ Chark, Chris Conley. I mean, this group of players there are teams in the NFL where I don't know that any of those guys would be active on a weekly basis. Like there are certain rosters at wide receiver that are so deep that I don't think they would even be on the active roster on a week-to-week basis, and they're the entirety of the Jaguars' receiving attack.
I like D.D. Westbrook. I think he's a good player. But I think all these other guys are secondary, tertiary options in pretty much every other offense. I agree with you.
Okay, so we have...
In this vein, one of the other bets that I was taking a look at, if we want to keep going on, Nick Foles could be a disaster.
Okay.
The Jags are 40-1 to have the worst record in the league.
I think the defense is too good for that, though.
That was my thought as well. But isn't there a chance that Nick Foles is just a complete, just unmitigated, horrendous disaster? Like, isn't that on the table?
For
sure. So if that's the case, then that's one of their odds compared to the other teams in that range, it just looked much better to me than the other options.
That's fair. And the other thing I'm going to say about Nick Foles, let me also say, this is an offense that wants to run the football. So it's not like Nick Foles is going to be throwing the ball 40 times a game on a regular basis. On top of that, Nick Foles gets hurt a lot. It's one of the things that happens with Nick Foles. You put him in for a bunch of starts, he gets hurt. And do you know who the backup quarterbacks for the Jaguars are? Because I did not know that as well.
Oh, my God. I know they picked the guy from Washington State.
They picked Gardner Minshew.
Gardner Minshew. I could not tell you his name, but I knew he played at Washington State, and I know I like him because he's fun. Yes. And I guess Tanner Lee is their backup? Good God.
Tanner Lee and Gardner Minshew are the backups in case Nick Foles, who I think when I looked at historically, he has not played more than 10 games in a row as a pro without getting injured. Nick Foles is in line to be replaced by him. So
let me reiterate, 40-1 to have the worst record in the league.
Still available at the Caesars Sportsbooks. So I'm going under Nick Foles because I think there's an injury risk, a significant injury risk. The receivers are terrible and the offense is built towards the run. It's not a big total, 35-54 in the modern NFL, but I can't abide by that. Less exciting, less fun to make fun of, I guess. Julio Jones under 1,569.5 receiving yards. There is always the risk of injury with Julio Jones, a guy who has had foot injuries in the past. I just don't know that they're going to throw the ball as much. This is an offense that I think really invested in their offensive line. My inclination is that they're going to run the ball more frequently. They're going to be a better team as a whole, I think, which would mean more running the ball in the second half. And you got to figure Calvin Ridley's going to have a slightly bigger role in his second year. There's a lot of weapons here on this offense. So I don't know that he gets the volume to get to that total of 1570.
I agree. And I think their defense is going to be better. You know, they're going to be so much healthier on that side of the ball. Hopefully they're not going to need to throw the ball as much.
Right.
That's a really big number. Even if you love Julio Jones as a player, I think it's going to be tough for him to hit that.
He didn't hit that in 2016. In 2017, hit it last year, 1677, as a starter. I mean, he's in that range. I just don't know that necessarily he's going to be quite that high again. And one more from me before we get to break here. Derrick Henry under 10.5 total touchdowns. I mean, he was great at the end of last year, but this is a guy who, I mean, earlier in the season, it seemed like he was being phased out of the offense altogether or was going to be basically on his way out in Tennessee. We don't know enough about this offense. We don't know enough about how they're going to use their players. I don't know how committed this organization is to Derrick Henry on a season-by-season basis. I just don't have faith that he's going to score 11 touchdowns. It's just a high number in the modern NFL.
So let me piggyback on that because I kind of had a similar thought, but it was about Marcus Mariota.
Sure.
He's over under 3,000 passing yards.
Oof.
There is a chance he's not the quarterback by, like, week 8.
Yes.
Right?
For multiple
reasons.
He's
traded for Ryan Tannehill. He's in a contract year. And he's also somebody that gets hurt all the time. So I just thought under 3,000 was interesting because of all those factors.
Yeah, and this is a guy who has averaged almost exactly 3,000 yards, 3,001 yard over the last four seasons, missing time in each of his first four NFL seasons. We have more bets. Sounds like a lot more bets coming from the other side of the phone here. We're going to hit them after the break on the Bill Barnwell Show. Welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell. ESPN, I am joined by the Ringer's Robert Mays to make some bets on the upcoming NFL season with the help of the odds at our friends with the Caesars Sportsbooks. Mays, what else do you have in terms of player props?
So we've talked about a couple of these already in just different ways. Sure. Jameis Winston, over 4,235 passing yards, I love. He was on pace for 4,350 last year. I think they're going to throw the ball a ton. We've discussed this.
Here's the problem with that, though. You say on pace. Jameis Winston has a way of not being on the football field.
That is fair. I think if he plays 16 games this year, he will definitely be over that number. If he plays 15 games this year, I think he'll be over that number.
Wow.
There's not a chance this year to me that he gets benched. Because I feel like they're really going to try to see what they have here. But again, contract year, first year with Arians. I'm not sure there's going to be a quick hook because Dirk Cutter was coaching for his job last year. That's not what's happening in this season with them. I think you're going to see him on the field as long as he is healthy.
I think it hurts. It just hurts me to see you, a Mizzou graduate, disparage fine Blaine Gabbert as not worthy of playing time under Bruce Arians.
Bruce Arians loves Blaine Gabbert. I remember when I was there in Arizona a couple of years ago, and I was talking to somebody about Arians and Carson Palmer, and they were just mentioning that Bruce Arians was so excited about the prospect of reviving Blaine Gabbert and, like, salvaging his career. It was like his project. For some reason, he just loves Blaine Gabbert.
Okay. If you could see 8 games of this combination, would you rather see Blaine Gabbert with Bruce Arians in Tampa or Blake Bortles with Sean McVay in Los Angeles?
Oh, Bortles with McVay. It's way more interesting to me.
It would be so great.
I really hope it happens for like two games. I don't want anything bad to happen to Jared Goff. I like Jared Goff, but just for a couple games, just as an experiment, I would want to see it happen.
Right. Like I want Jared Goff to get like chicken pox or something, just not being available for 2 months.
Yeah, he has the flu really bad 1 week. He just can't play.
Right.
So the Jameis one I had, Cam over 22.5 touchdowns. We talked about how much we like the Panthers. He had 24 last season, and he couldn't throw.
Yeah, his shoulder stopped working.
Last games of the year. So I really like that one. And I like Dak Prescott over 3,500 passing yards. Mm-hmm. I think that offense is going to be much more efficient throwing the ball. He had 3,800 last season, and their defense was excellent last season. Mm-hmm. So I think there are a lot of things kind of coalescing there that make me feel pretty good about him.
Yeah, I just don't think that team is going to be as good as it was a year ago. So you figure they're going to be throwing the ball more in the fourth quarter of games.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. Because the defense is probably going to take a slight step back. I love the personnel there. I think that they could be really good again. I just think the offense has a chance to be better because I really didn't like what Linehan did there. If Kellen Moore can kind of come in and inject some energy and a little bit of modern football into that group, I do think they're talented enough to be pretty good. Travis Frederick is back this year. Yeah. They're kind of an unknown to me. I don't really know. I can't put my finger on them quite yet. That's what I'll say.
I think if you were going to make the case for the Cowboys being better, I think it starts with you get hopefully 16 games with Travis Frederick. You get a healthier Tyron Smith, hopefully. And then that's the core of your team is that offensive line. And you have, you had an all-pro replaced by, held by Scotch Tate pretty much. It was a totally different roster without him, in the center of that offense. We don't know how good he's going to be coming back from, an illness that I don't think we've even seen the NFL before. But, you have to figure he's going to be better than what they had at center a year ago.
I'm with you. I think that he's one of the more valuable players in the league that we don't talk about. And for them to just get him back, even if he's 85% of what he used to be, that's a massive advantage for them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get to some unders that are depressing for me and you.
Oh, no. Okay, let's hear him.
Eli Manning, under 18.5 touchdown passes.
Oh, what's that?
It's a very low number, but it would be hilarious to bet on, and that's why I want to.
Do you prefer that to under 2,999.5 passing yards?
Let's just do both. Why not? Let's just double dip.
You want to parlay?
That's fine with me. Connected to that, Sterling Shepard is at 969 receiving yards. Why? Odell Beckham isn't there? Golden Tate is there. I hit 872 last year. I have very little faith in that passing game. That number is a little too high for me. Jason Witten is at 34.5 receptions?
How dare you?
In what universe?
Former ESPN employee Jason Witten. I mean, he's like, you don't have to get a lot of yards to get 34.5 receptions. You could just catch 35 passes and fall down. That's not out of the question.
If Jason Witten caught 35 passes this season for the Cowboys, how many receiving yards will he have? 75?
I don't want that's not nice. That's a mean thing to say, Mace. He had 63 receptions in 2017.
I am not feeling very good about the Jason Witten production. But if we're being mean, I will be mean to my own team for a moment. Okay. The Bears over-under takeaways are 26.5. That is probably too many. I know they had 36 last year, but we've talked about this, you and I, ad nauseum for years. Turnovers are not sticky. They do not tend to continue year after year. Even when your team is very good at it, that number is most likely going to drop by a lot. 26.5 is a very high number.
So you're telling me Kyle Fuller, who appeared to be unable to catch the ball for most of his career before 2018, is not going to have 7 interceptions again?
I don't think so. I think the Bears can be good. I think there are a lot of things that need to improve on the other side of the ball if the defense is going to get slightly worse, but I don't think that they're going to have 27 takeaways again.
I think they're going to be a very good defense, but you can be a very good defense and still not have, 30-plus takeaways the way you did a year ago.
Exactly.
And you figure this offense is – the offenses in the division hopefully are going to be better. The Vikings are not going to throw the ball as frequently, you would figure. Detroit seems to want to run the ball more frequently, and then Green Bay – you would figure is going to be at least a little different, hopefully better for the better with Aaron Rodgers healthy and Mike McCarthy ensconced somewhere away from the premises at Lambeau Field. Not to knock the defense. I think the defense is going to be great, but it's just really, really difficult to keep that up year after year.
Just in terms of wins and losses in that division, have you kind of come to any conclusions? Because I was looking at the over-unders for all of those teams, and I just have no idea. I can go either way on all four of them. Do you have anybody that you like?
I would leave the Lions out of it. I have no faith in the Lions doing anything of note. They're at 6.5. I would probably go under at even money there, as opposed to over at -120. Packers are 9, and it's 10 cents in both directions. Basically just, an even 9 wins. I would be inclined to slightly go over that. I mean, this is a team that I think sold out in a lot of ways to try and win in the next year or two with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. And I like the additions they made. I don't know that I like the prices for the additions they made. But I think certainly a better team than they were a year ago. Bears are 9 with juice on the over. I would be inclined to go slightly under that. I think it's more likely they go 8-8 or 9-7 than they do 10-6 or 11-5 again.
All three of those teams at the top of the division are over under 9.
Yep.
And if I had to bet any of the overs, I would say it's the Vikings.
I agree.
They're the one I like the best. I think the defense is still going to be really good. I really like schematically what they're trying to do offensively this year. I think it fits Kirk Cousins very well. Mm-hmm. So that's the team I like the best. But again, it's a dice roll to me with those three.
It does seem weird that there are two teams in this division who pay their quarterbacks $30 million a year, or close to $30 million a year, have multiple excellent wide receivers, and who have decided they want to run the football more.
I don't know if the Vikings are necessarily going to run the ball more. I think that it's going to be just a different look offense. I think you're going to see much more play action. I think if that is the end-all, be-all outcome of that, then I'm totally fine with the approach.
Let's talk about, very briefly, Vikings offensive line. How do you feel about moving Pat Elflein to guard?
I think he'll be fine. I think that his biggest issue was health last year. I really like the center that they drafted. I think Bradberry is a perfect fit for that scheme, and I think Elflein will be just fine.
Mm. Okay, so in terms of do you have any more player props you want to hit before we get to the over-unders here?
Similar, I'm talking about Vikings offense, I think Dalvin Cook over 6.5 touchdowns is interesting. I think he's going to get a lot of work. I like him as a player. I think their line is going to be considerably better. And then you look at the Steelers offense, Juju at 1,350 receiving yards. I think he goes over that. I think he leads the league in targets this year. I really do. And
really?
Ben Roethlisberger's 4,405 in passing yards. He had 5,000 last year. They've really kind of given him the keys that he loves to throw it around. I would bet big on those two.
Now, you recently wrote about the wide receivers in the NFL, and the conclusion you came to as the best wide receiver in football is the person I think is the best wide receiver in football in DeAndre Hopkins. You think Juju gets more targets than DeAndre Hopkins?
Yeah, because I think that there are other guys in that offense. I mean, if Will Fuller is around, I think that he's going to take
some
of those.
You said an important word there, though, Mays.
I know.
It is a big word.
Kiki Kuti got a lot of work last year when he was in the lineup. I just think that there are more proven options. I think Cootie's more proven than anybody on the Steelers offense right now. I mean, Dante Moncrief is fine, but you really think that Dante Moncrief is going to cut into Juju's looks? I just don't think so.
Are you not worried about – I guess I should be worried about the indomitable Lamar Miller eating 200 carries a year as part of that Texans offense.
Oh, it's so depressing. Anybody that has to draft Lamar Miller in their fantasy league this year because it's just too late and you can't say no, it's going to be the worst moment.
I think I've owned him in every single fantasy league I play in over the past 3 years, one way or another.
It is the least fun thing you can do, is draft Lamar Miller. It is not enjoyable in any way.
It's so strange. Like, is there a player you remember who was like that, where it was just, he was going to get the ball, you were not going to be excited about it, and, like, you knew, like, it was good for you in the long run to have him, because he was mildly productive, but just, there was never going to be a game where he was incredible, or looked exciting?
I'm sure there are other examples of that. I think there are times later in Frank Gore's career where it just, you weren't pumped about having Frank Gore, but it's like, I have to do this. I'm sure that there are other ones. I can't believe I can't think of any right now, because it seems like we've all had like 40 of those guys.
All right. I'd say like late career Edgerrin James, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. I think that's a good example.
Yeah, it was not ideal. So in terms of over-unders.
Like, no one ever had fun having LeGarrette Blount later in his career.
Yes.
He did that big season in New England with the touchdowns, but for the most part, it was a very plodding experience.
I just picture that being the name of LeGarrette Blount's autobiography, a very plodding experience, LeGarrette Blount's story. So sweet. All right, so I have three over-unders. We've sort of alluded to one of them already. I'll just start with that one. I'm going Cowboys under 9 wins at -120. And
interesting.
I agree. Offensive line is going to be better. I have faith in that, and that is a huge, huge thing for this Cowboys offense. I'm a little skeptical of how the offense is going to work with Kellen Moore. Again, I think it's certainly better than what we were going to have at Scott Linehan in paper, but I think about that Cole Beasley quote from the offseason he put on Twitter about the offense, that the ownership was deciding where the ball was going to go. I don't think it's quite that significant, but I think if the offense is not satisfying to the people who are in charge, changes are going to be made, even if they are not for the better to Kellen Moore's scheme, if they struggle early on in the season. I don't have a ton of faith in the defense being better. We got a healthy season from Jalen Smith, Byron Jones, who had been, a middling corner / safety over his career, was a great cornerback for most of last year. Tough to count on that happening again. Not the sort of record you would expect from a 10-6 team or the sort of point differential, 8.4 expected wins, likely to decline by that metric. A lot of luck in close games, especially late in the season, to help win the NFC East. And they're playing a first-place schedule this year. So that means you're getting to play the Saints again, which is not necessarily going to be ideal, at New Orleans early in the year. They host Green Bay. They host Philadelphia. They host Minnesota. They're at the Patriots. They're at the Bears in December. They host the Rams. They're at the Eagles in December. It's a tough schedule for the Cowboys. So I think it's more likely they're a 7-9 team than they are an 11-5 team.
I hear all that. Those are good arguments. I can definitely see it going that way. I'm just so interested in what the offense is going to look like, because the other things that Cole Beasley said were they just lined up in the same spots every time. It would be impossible to be less imaginative than the Cowboys were last season on offense. And now that I just said that, I know that the Seahawks exist. So it's really difficult to be less imaginative than the Cowboys were on offense last year. And I just think they're going to be better this season. The defense, I agree with you, though. There's no reason they could be better. I mean, what would you point to? Leighton Vander Esch, it's like, oh, he's in year two. Maybe he'll take a step forward. How much better can he be than he was last year?
Mm-hmm, right.
And I feel the same way about Byron Jones. It just feels like we got career years from a lot of those guys, and they didn't really add anybody. I like Christian Covington as a player, but that doesn't really move the needle. Quinn is fine.
I wish we could go back to like the 2011 podcast and tell the 2011 versions ourselves that the Cowboys would trade for Robert Quinn, and we would be like, yeah, that's fine. He's whatever. He's a guy.
Robert Quinn is a solid player. He is not somebody that I think is going to be a world changer.
It's just sad. It's just sad to see what's happened.
I know.
He's like the defensive Lamar Miller.
Good God. All right, which other ones do you have?
I got the, this is not going to win me many fans, the New York Giants over 5.5 wins. Over 5, and they only got to get to 6.
Oh, God. 6 is not an easy task for that team, my man. I don't disagree with you. I like to make fun, and I think that Eli is so incredibly washed, it's hilarious.
Okay.
But I do think that they are better than they were last season overall.
Okay, so if you're going to make the argument that Eli is washed, which I am absolutely on board with, there's a chance Daniel Jones is better than Eli Manning, no?
There's a chance.
There might even be a reasonable chance.
About the Daniel Jones experience.
I'm not excited about the long term of the Daniel Jones experience, but could he be better than Eli Manning in year one, when Eli Manning is perhaps literally falling apart in front of our eyes? I don't think that's crazy to imagine. And of course, I don't love the Odell Beckham trade. I think it was stupid. I think it was incredibly short-sighted and naive. But adding Golden Tate, at least in the short term, mitigates a lot of what you lost to Odell Beckham. Obviously not the same sort of player. I'm not going to say that. But it's not as if they lack for options in the passing game. It's not like they traded Odell Beckham and they have nothing left at receiver. They're totally fine at receiver. And I think they've made a big upgrade on the offensive line by trading for Kevin Zeidler. Okay.
You just tried to argue or rationalize that Golden Tate coming in for Odell Beckham makes the Giants fine at receiver.
No. I'm saying they're not like, it's not as if they traded Odell Beckham and suddenly they have the worst receiving core in the NFL. They're not the Jaguars when it comes to the weapons they have.
Okay, that's fine. I'd like to amend my prior statement, though,
when
I said that they were better on personnel-wise than they were last season, because now I'm looking at the defense again. Do you know who the starting edge rushers are for the New York Giants?
Do I know who the starting edge rushers is? Does Kareem Martin count? Is he one of them?
I believe it's Kareem Martin and B.J. Hill.
Oh, no. That can't be right. Something is wrong there.
It is a terrible scenario. Oh, Marcus Golden. Marcus Golden. Because their depth chart is very wonky because it's a 3-4. So Marcus Golden and Kareem Martin are pretty much those guys. So the lesser edge rushers from those Arizona teams that were fine, those are your starting pass rushers.
They traded for a Pro Bowl caliber safety in Jabril Peppers. They might have lost a Pro Bowl caliber safety, but whatever, no big deal. They don't got to be good, Maze. They just got to get to six. They just got to get to six, which I if the Cowboys decline, I think that's pretty strongly correlated with the Giants being better than they were a year ago. And it's by the way, last year, 7 expected wins with that 5-11 record. Very bad in close games. So even if they decline a little bit from the team they were a year ago on a play-by-play basis, they could still top that 5.5 win total.
I'm picturing you walking up to the window at Caesars and just handing over your money and just saying, I would like the Giants over 6.5 wins. And just how much you must have hated yourself in that moment.
That's
all I can think about right now.
Handing the money and then handing a lighter over to start the, yeah, the fire process with the Giants. They just got to get to six. That's all I'm going to keep telling myself. And the problem is now I have to watch the Giants.
So depressing.
I have to watch the Giants all year and root for the Giants to get to six wins. That's the worst part of this.
Oh, God, that's terrible.
So sad.
I'm so sorry, buddy.
I got one more, and I'm staying in New York. I'm going Jets over 7.5 wins.
I like that one.
Okay.
The Darnold MVP thing is a little crazy to me, but I think that, again, you don't have to like the value that the Jets recouped for some of these players.
Sure.
But there are better players in the building this year than they were last year.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no denying that. And I think that Sam Darnold looked really good down the stretch last year. I'm very bullish on how good he's going to be.
Yes. Paying Le'Veon Bell an enormous amount of money might not be the best idea. Paying C.J. Mosley a ton of money might not be the best idea. Paying Jermaine Johnson a lot of money doesn't appear to have been the best idea. Hiring Adam Gase may be a terrible idea. I'm not so sure that's not going to sink them in itself, but the Dolphins were able to coax a 10-win season out of themselves with Adam Gase as their head coach. And I think this is a Jets team that there's talent there. I think undeniably you have talent on both sides of the football. I don't love the offensive line. I think that's the biggest problem with this team, and I could be underselling the issue with the offensive line, but if they get better quarterback play, if Sam Darnold takes a big step forward in his second season, which is hardly out of the question, given the weapons they've added, given the natural progression of quarterbacks in the NFL, given what we saw from the end of last season, then this could be a fundamentally different football team. And a team that, again, numbers say they were better than they were in terms of their actual record a year ago, 5.4 expected wins against a 4-12 record from a year ago. So I don't think they're the finished product. I would feel like it'd be dangerous to say they're going to make the playoffs as a wild card, but 8-8 would not shock me in the slightest.
The way that the Jets spent money this offseason, the contracts they gave to Bell, to Jameson Crowder, to C.J. Mosley, those deals and this sort of roster will win you 8 or 9 games.
Yes.
The problem is it will never win you more than 8 or 9 games.
Yes. But I think it could win. If everything breaks right, they could win 9, maybe 10 games this year, even though they have no shot of realistically winning a playoff game.
I'm with you. I think that, again, they added good players. I think Quinnen Williams is going to be really good. I mean,
yeah,
there is no denying this roster is considerably better than it was last season. It's just the way they spent money is going to hamper them building in the locker.
Yes. So who do you have for your over-unders?
We talked about a couple of them. I am so terrible at these because every time I look at these numbers, I think, that seems right. That seems right. I am awful at choosing them. I think that the Panthers over is the one I would feel the best about. They were at 8. I mean, that one I really like. I like the Jaguars under. You know, they were at 8. You know, if we're going with the full stuff we were talking about earlier. Again, the NFC North I have no feel for. I think the Saints at 10.5 is a little high. I would go under with that. It's just they win 9 games to me more often than they win 11 games this year. Mm-hmm. So those are the ones that I would probably feel the strongest about.
How do you feel about Seahawks at 8.5?
That team is another one where it feels like they're in such flux, right? I mean, I love their offseason. I think that the strategy they've taken now with Russell Wilson's contract and really trading back and getting picks for Frank Clark, everything else, I like what they're doing, but I still think they lost talent this season, and I don't know how good that team is going to be. I like their long-term outlook, but 8.5 to me might seem a little bit high. I think I'd probably go under, but I'm betting against Russell Wilson in that case, so I wouldn't feel good about it.
Can I break your heart, Miz?
Yes, you can.
I think I would go under Chargers at 10.
I can't talk about this rationally. And this team is so talented. I love them every year. And now they're more talented. I think drafting Jerry Tillery in the first round was excellent. Mm-hmm. I think it makes a strength even stronger. There are very few spots on that roster where I have doubts about how good they're going to be. I think the offensive line is going to be better. Forrest Lamp is apparently healthy, which is a huge thing for them. They have issues at tackle, but for the most part, I think their roster is just so complete. I love them. It's, again, I can't see this with clear eyes, so I'm not going to argue with you about it.
Can you explain why they signed Tyrod Taylor to back up Phillip Rivers, though?
I cannot explain that. I mean, I think Tyrod Taylor is a pretty solid backup quarterback.
Sure, but for Phillip Rivers, just seems very odd to me.
I don't know. I think it'll be just fine. I think Tyrod Taylor can function just fine in that system. You know what part of it is? Tyrod Taylor has operated a lot from the shotgun in his career, and they use the shotgun almost exclusively I was going to say San Diego, but I think there are more similarities than you think there are.
Okay. I'll give you it. I just feel like Tyrod Taylor should have gone to Baltimore. Just seemed like it makes sense for everybody involved.
Yeah, no, you're right. That definitely makes more sense than the Chargers. But I still think that if you're going to get out and get a backup quarterback, and you want one that's even a little bit proven, that can win you games if you need to put him in. I think Tyrod Taylor's that guy, even if stylistically it doesn't necessarily make a ton of sense.
All right. I'm also – I didn't pick it as one of my picks, but I would go over 8 for the Niners at -125. I just – even if Jimmy Garoppolo gets hurt, I have faith that the offense is going to be okay with Nick Mullins at quarterback.
Nick Mullins averaged 8.3 yards per attempt last season.
That's 8.3.
Kyle Shanahan is a wizard.
He's good at his job, as it turns
out.
He's
very good at it. He is very good at drawing lines on paper and making people open in football games.
And I mean, this is a very good offensive line. It is a defense that is dramatically improved. I mean, I don't know that any defense added two impact pieces the way that the at a position of absolute need the Niners did by drafting Nick Bosa and trading for Dee Ford. I mean, that is suddenly a scary defensive line that they've been trying to build for years and years now. You'd figure it's going to be the best it's been since the Jim Harbaugh days, in terms of what it'll be in 2019. Secondary.
I'm just so scared about the secondary. There's so many questions there. Their young players have not developed at the rate they wanted them to. Richard Sherman's a year older. That area terrifies me. I like everything else about this team, but I think they didn't do nearly enough to improve there.
Okay, so Jason Verrett is on this football team.
If Jason Verrett is healthy, this conversation changes. But didn't you – you were giving me, you know, a hard time for – who was it? Will Fuller saying if he stays healthy. I think that Will Fuller is a little bit healthier than Jason Verrett historically.
What would you set the over-under at for Jason Verrett games played in 2019?
I mean, should it be more than like 6.5? I love Jason Verrett. I hope he stays healthy. That would be amazing. I would love getting to watch healthy Jason Verrett play football again, but how can you have any faith in that?
It's tough. It's very tough. They do have a great kicker who does not appear to be inclined to head to the Chicago Bears anytime soon.
No, they will be trading a first-round pick for him come like June, and I will I'll be totally fine with it. It'll have the stamp of approval.
You would actually make that trade. You would actually give up a first. Well, they don't have a first-round pick, so they can't.
No, I'm joking. I wouldn't give up anything over like a late-round pick. But it's funny. Every once in a while, my football analyst hat, I'm like, I would never give up any sort of draft capital for a kicker. And then I hear all the things coming out of Bears minicamp. It's like, I don't care. Trade whatever it takes. It doesn't matter anymore.
Why did the Bears cut Robbie Gould again?
It doesn't make any sense. I still don't understand it.
What was the argument at the time?
He was getting paid a lot of money. They were trying to rebuild a little bit. I think that they were really just trying to tear down the roster overall, and it made sense. But I still, looking back on it, it's so frustrating.
Why haven't the Bears at least brought in Matt Bryant for a tryout?
I don't know. The Bears and kickers are logic is never going to be in play here. I have no idea what's going on.
Why is Matt Bryant not employed? What am I missing here?
I have no clue. I have absolutely no idea.
it really bothers me. He's actually a good kicker in a league where there's like eight of those, and nobody wants to seem to sign him. Maybe he doesn't want to play. I don't know. But from what I understand,
he's probably made a decent amount of money.
Okay. You know what the Bears should do? Give him more than a decent amount of money, because they were a kicker away from maybe, you know, making it deep into the NFC playoffs last year. And it is the one obvious hole in their roster right now.
I'm aware. Trust me. I am painfully aware.
Okay. Do you have any other over-unders that interest you?
No, that was really it. Again, those are the only ones I feel strongly about. I think for the most part, these all make sense to me. I always have a hard time because Vegas is much smarter than me.
All right. One more, and then I'm going to go. Does Colts at 10 seem a little high to you?
I'm really optimistic about them, but 10 for anybody is high. So I would tend to say that I think they win 10 or more games. 10 is the number I'd probably land on. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you think that there's a 50% chance you can go less than that, that's fine. But I like that team. I think that they did a really good job this offseason of still being patient but adding talent. And they were good last year. So I don't know. I wouldn't feel good about betting less than 10 for them.
I love the Colts. I think they've done a lot of things really well. I think they're maybe the best run team in football right now, or certainly one of the top two or three. It's a lot of wins for a team that was, you know, pretty mediocre for the first half of the year last year.
Matt Bryant has made $32 million in his career.
Good for him.
Do you think that's enough money for him to just say it's not worth going to a place with all this existential kicker dread now? I'm going to just count my money and live in Florida or wherever he lives in the offseason.
What if Matt Bryant has a gambling addiction? Was that so out of the question for you?
Yeah, that's pretty out of the question for me.
You don't see Matt Bryant just you know, making bets on the sideline during Falcons games?
I do not. Matt Bryant has been in the league for 17 years, and he's 44 years old. Does that mean Matt Bryant came into the NFL when he was 27 years old?
Is that true? I remember him coming to the NFL as, like, the Giants kicker. But I don't remember him being that old at the time. Yeah, I mean, he was 27 when he entered the NFL. That's so
he
sad.
He played for the Iowa Barnstormers
with Kurt
in
Warner,
2000.
Presumably.
The Berlin. So he spent 3 years in Europe. That's why.
So he had a 3-year European vacation. You're telling me he doesn't have debt still? I find that extremely unlikely.
Listen, Matt Bryant, if you have money issues, I'm more than willing to, like, throw you a couple bucks to come to Chicago. I will chip in for this.
The way that Matt Bryant's headshot is framed on the Pro Football Reference site makes it look like he is in a commercial after his career for, like, a male enhancement product, and he has, like, a generic jersey on, like the Frank Thomas ads for whatever that thing is. It looks like he's sponsoring a product that he shouldn't be sponsoring.
He very much does not look like an NFL player, I will say that.
You know what? 5'9", 203, good for you, Matt Bryant. I'm happy you had a 27-year career, and I wish you would play more because the NFL needs you. All right, Maze, I don't. My plan here was to basically come up with $1,000 worth of bets. That did not go the way I planned. You just had a barrage of bets with no rhyme or reason. So we can't really go back and analyze it from a win-loss perspective, but we'll have you back on later in the year to talk about what happened and whether our reads on this upcoming season were correct.
Sounds good, buddy. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Until then, though, where can people check out your work?
At theringer.com. We do the Ringer NFL show once a week right now. We're doing a bunch of kind of big picture off-season podcasts looking at one central topic. We'll be continuing that this week. And just writing for the upcoming season. We're getting going here, man. 4th of July is in the rearview now, a couple weeks away from camp. So it's really going to be ramping up.
All right. Well, hate to say it, as my dog Maggie snores in the background, couldn't entertain her, but hopefully Robert Maze entertained you on the show. Thanks so much, buddy.
Thanks, bud.
All right. Thanks so much to my guest today, Robert Maze of The Ringer. Always a pleasure to have Maze on. And guys, just so you know, by the way, the SB Day auction is upon us again. And if you're ready for Monday Night Football this upcoming year with a brand new lineup of analysts just announced, you can go behind the scenes at the Monday Night game of your choice to see how the magic is made. If you win the auction for Monday Night Football, you receive 2 tickets to the game of your choice during the 2019 regular season, a ESPN behind-the-scenes tour, and a meet-and-greet with the Monday Night Football broadcast team. Cannot recommend that highly enough. Can also, if you prefer college football, attend the 2019 Heisman Award Ceremony at the PlayStation Theater in New York City in December of 2019. You get 2 tickets to the highly exclusive award ceremony for the most coveted award in all of college football. You know, the Heisman Trophy. Imagine going to the ceremony. That would be awesome. You can't do that typically. You can do it if you win the auction, because ESPN is giving you the chance to experience this historic moment. And even better, if you head over to ebay.com/ESPN for details, you can make a donation to the V Foundation for Cancer Research and win an auction, get to do something really cool that I don't even have the chance to do when I'm an ESPN employee. So you can do that. Again, ebay.com/ESPN for details on those auctions and many others. In the fight against cancer, we will never give up. So thanks so much for listening, and more audio coming next week.